Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on all Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
The crypt doors have opened. The shadows are stirring. And I'm finally back. That's right. Big D is back. I'm back for season four of Guess What? You're Wrong. After a brief hiatus, we're back and we're diving headfirst into some of the best and definitely some of the worst horror flicks that you can find. And as always, we're going to spoil the hell out of any movie we discuss. So grab your flashlights, hide your snacks, and crack a jar. It's time to get spooky.
Enjoy the show!
Now, before we get into this episode too far, I just got a little disclaimer here. First off, all audio used in this podcast is used under the protection of fair use. And as with all of my movie reviews that I do here on Guess What? You're Wrong, we spoil the hell out of everything we talk about. So you have been warned.
Welcome back to another classically disturbing episode of Guess What? You're Wrong. Now, as you can see today, I'm diving back into some of these classics. A while ago, I had started tackling some classics, starting in the 20s, moving on to the 30s. There's a lot of good movies in the 30s, though, so I think I'm going to stick around in the 30s for a little bit longer. But today, we're actually going to tackle that movie there, Freaks. From 1932, let's go ahead and get a quick synopsis here. A circus beautiful trapeze artist, Cleopatra, agrees to marry Hans, the leader of a sideshow of performers. But Hans's deformed little friends discover that she's only marrying him for his inheritance. So they seek revenge. That's kind of accurate. I mean, no. Directed by Todd Browning, written by Clarence Aaron Todd Robbins, Willis Goldbeck, Leon Gordon. The stars in this thing. Frosso was Wallace Ford. Venus was Leila Himes. Olga Baklanova was Cleopatra. Roscoe Attis was Roscoe. I mean, there's a big list here. I'm going to hit up some of these. Harry Earls was Hans. Daisy Earls was Frida. We'll talk about that a little bit later. That's something. Yeah. Anyway, Schlitzy was one of the pinheads. Olga Roderick was the bearded lady. We'll get into, you know, a lot of the actors and stuff a little bit later on. Prince Randian as the living torso. I mean, it just goes on and on. There's so many great performances in this movie here. But you know what? Let's just dive into this movie. See what we got. Now, some horror movies, they scare you, right? Now, some horror movies disturb you. And some horror movies don't really scare you at all. They just make you deeply uncomfortable about what you're watching. Freaks is one of those movies. This movie is almost 100 years old, and it still manages to upset people. Not because of gore, not because of violence, and not because of anything supernatural. It upsets people because it refuses to let you sit comfortably in the audience. Now, before we go any further, I want to be very clear at what type of episode this is and what it's not, okay? This is not a novelty watch. This is not a so bad it's good movie. And this is definitely not a curiosity you laugh at and then move on from. Freaks exist to ask a very specific question, and it asks without flinching. Who is the monster? When power enters the room, who is the monster? Now, when this movie was released in 1932, audiences reacted badly. Not mixed reviews badly, not ahead of its time badly. They reacted violently badly. The film was banned in multiple countries, in multiple states. It was heavily cut, careers were damaged, and for decades, Freaks was treated like something that needed to be hidden. Not because it was immoral, but because it was too honest. And here's the important part. Audiences were not offended by the violence or by any violence. They were offended by accountability. This movie does something that still makes people uncomfortable today. It forces you to confront where your sympathy naturally goes. Not who you say you feel for, but who you actually feel for. Freaks doesn't ask you to pity its characters. It doesn't ask you to rescue them. It doesn't frame them as inspirational. It simply presents them as people within a community, with loyalty, and with boundaries. And then it introduces people with power into that space. That's where the horror is. This episode isn't about judging performers. It's not about gawking, and it's not about pretending this movie is easy to watch. It's about understanding why Freaks still matters and why horror keeps returning to this exact moral question over and over and over again. Because at its core, Freaks is not a movie about difference. It's a movie about power. Who has that power and who abuses that power? And what happens when people who are used to being exploited just decide that they've had enough? Now, and if that makes you uncomfortable, good. That discomfort's the point. So today, we're going to take our time with Freaks, right? We're going to talk about context, about power, morality, and why this movie still lands like a punch almost a century later. Because Freaks doesn't ask who looks like a monster. It asks who acts like one. Now, context matters. Freaks and the world that it came from, right? To understand Freaks, you have to understand the world that it came from. And just as importantly, the world it was dropped into. Because this movie didn't appear in a vacuum, right? It arrived at a very specific moment in Hollywood history. And that timing matters. Freaks was released in 1932 during what's known as the pre-code era. That's a period before Hollywood censorship really clamped down, before studios were terrified of public backlash or religious pressure or moral outrage. In that window, filmmakers were experimenting. They were pushing boundaries. And they were telling stories that didn't always reassure the audience. Freaks is one of the most extreme examples of that freedom. And also, one of the reasons that freedom didn't last. Now, the thing people always point to within Freaks is the casting. The performers in this film, they weren't actors. They weren't actors that were made up to look different. They were real sideshow performers, real people, real bodies. And that decision is the foundation of everything this movie does. Because Freaks doesn't stylize difference. It doesn't soften it. And it doesn't translate it into something safer for the audience. Instead, it presents these performers as a community. They live together. They look out for each other. They have relationships, routines, and rules. And that's important because the movie never treats them as curiosities. There's no inspirational framing. There's no sentimental music telling you how to feel. And there's no attempt to turn them into symbols. They're just people. Now, what makes this uncomfortable, especially for audiences in 1932, is that this wasn't how these performers were usually presented. In real life, sideshow performers were often exploited, advertised, reduced to spectacle. Freaks strips that framing away. And in doing so, it takes away the emotional distance the audience was used to having. You're not watching from a safe space in the audience anymore. You're inside the space. And that choice alone would have been enough to make people uneasy. Because once the audience is grounded inside this community, then the film introduces the outsiders. And that's where the power dynamic shifts. The so-called normal characters enter this space, assuming control, assuming superiority, assuming entitlement. They believe politeness is enough, that civility excuses cruelty, that because they look acceptable, their actions will be forgiven. And the movie never once endorses that belief. This is where Freaks quietly becomes something radical, right? It doesn't ask you to admire difference. It asks you to recognize belonging. And it makes one thing very clear early on. The people in this community understand loyalty. Loyalty. They understand boundaries. And they understand what happens when those boundaries are crossed. That's the context audiences in 1932 weren't prepared for. Not because it was shocking, but because it removed the audience's sense of moral superiority. And once that safety net is gone, the movie doesn't put it back. That's why context matters here. Because Freaks isn't asking to be accepted. It's asking to be reckoned with. Now, one thing that I found about this movie that kind of drew me in was the fact that they use actual performers in this. I still have that IMDb up here. Let me see. I'm going to open up another one. If I don't. The actors in this movie being actual, you know, sideshow performers, you couldn't have made this movie with actors just dressed up and made to look different. You couldn't have done that. So when they use the actual performers, sideshow performers, it adds that layer of reality, I'll say. Yeah. Now, as we move on, you know, as to normal as predation, and power entitlement, and who actually poses the threat, we look at Freaks, right? Once you understand the context of Freaks, the movie becomes much harder to misread. Because this isn't a story about danger coming from the margins. It's a story about danger arriving politely. One of the most uncomfortable things Freaks does is flip the expected threat. The people who are framed as normal, the ones who move easily in society, they're the ones with power, right? They're not loud. They're not violent right away. And they don't see themselves as cruel. They see themselves as entitled. This is where a lot of people misunderstand the movie. They assume the horror comes from appearance. It doesn't. The horror comes from behavior. The so-called normal characters and freaks enter this community with assumptions already in place. They assume they're smarter. They assume that they're superior. And most importantly, they assume that they're untouchable. Politeness becomes a shield. Because as long as they speak kindly, smile, and follow social norms, they believe their actions won't be questioned. This is predation that hides behind civility. Not violence in the open, violence with manners. And the movie never lets you mistake that for innocence. What's unsettling here is how recognizable this behavior still is today. The manipulation, the exploitation, the quiet testing of boundaries to see what you can get away with. Freaks shows how power doesn't need to announce itself, right? It just needs access. Now, this is where the film draws a very sharp line. Difference doesn't need equal danger. Entitlement does. And entitlement in this movie isn't loud or dramatic. It's casual. It looks like jokes made at someone else's expense. We've all done it, right? It looks like manipulation disguised as affection. It looks like assuming consent because no one has ever stopped you. The movie is very clear about one thing. This community understands exactly what's happening to them. They're not naive, and they're not confused, and they're not blind to the exploitation. They're watching. And this is where audience discomfort really starts to spike, because the movie refuses to reassure you. It doesn't step in and say, don't worry, they don't notice. They notice. They always notice. What makes this section of the film so effective is that it exposes how often society excuses harm as long as it's done by the right people. As long as it looks acceptable, as long as it follows the rules. Freaks tears that illusion apart. It says very plainly, cruelty doesn't need to be violent to be destructive. And here's the uncomfortable truth the movie sits with. When harm is repeated long enough, it stops feeling accidental. And at a certain point, intent, it stops mattering. What matters is impact. This is where Freaks becomes moral horror, right? Not because something frightening happens, but because something unjust keeps happening. And the film doesn't rush to stop it. It just lets it continue because it wants you to feel how exploitation actually works. Slowly, politely, and in plain sight. That's why the threat in this movie never feels monstrous. It feels familiar. And once you recognize that, the ending stops feeling shocking. It starts to feel inevitable. Now, Harry Earls and Daisy Earls, who in the movie are like a couple, I guess. I don't know if they're married, fiancé, whatever. In real life, they're brother and sister. So some of the scenes, you know, they were a little standoffish a little bit, but Harry Earls is the main character. He's a small guy, you know. And then we have Olga Baklanova, who plays Cleopatra. Now, the whole premise behind this is that she's beautiful, right? Hans is entranced by her beauty. But she's, you know, 5'8". She's what's considered the normal height nowadays. And he's a small guy. He's a midget. So she leads him on a while, you know. I mean, that's, you know, all her friends, you know, the Siamese twins, and I mean, everybody that's there notices what's going on, and they're watching, and they're watching. And Frida keeps telling them, you know, there's something, you know, they don't, it's not normal. That's not like how it is. But Hans is like, no, I love her. Well, it comes out later on, basically, that Cleopatra finds out that Hans is very wealthy. Very wealthy. And so Cleopatra is going to, she comes up with this scheme to basically marry him. And so that way she can get all that money. Now, Cleopatra, I believe it's Hercules, Henry Victor, that she's, you know, she's the one, she's working with behind the stage, behind the scenes, trying to trick Hans. So that's where we're at, you know, as far as the movie itself goes. And that's what's going on. And this is what has led us to this point here. Moral horror, justice, and the ending. Now, when accountability stops being abstract in Freaks, this is a point where Freaks stops being a movie you can watch passively. Because once exploitation has a pattern, the film asks the question, it refuses to soften. What does justice look like when harm has already been done? Most horror movies give you a clear moral map. There's a monster. There's a victim. And when the monster is defeated, the audience is allowed to relax. Freaks does not give you that comfort because the harm in this movie isn't sudden. It's repeated. By the time the film reaches its final act, nothing that happens feels impulsive. It feels considered. And this is where people get uncomfortable because the movie doesn't frame what happens next as chaos. It frames it as a response, and that distinction matters. A lot of viewers try to simplify the ending of Freaks. They want to label it as revenge horror. But revenge implies excess, right? What happens here isn't excess. It's just enforcement. This community has rules. They've already demonstrated loyalty, patience, and restraint at this point in the movie. What the film shows is what happens after all of that fails. And this is where the audience starts to squirm. Because the movie doesn't suddenly switch moral frameworks. It applies the same rules it's been using the entire time. If exploitation is acceptable when done politely, then the consequences have to be acceptable as well, right? This is the moment where many viewers, they pull back. They say the ending goes too far. But the film never pretends that this outcome is pleasant. It also never pretends it's undeserved. And that's the tightrope Freaks walks on without blinking. It doesn't celebrate what happens, but it refuses to condemn it either. Instead, it does something far more unsettling. It makes you sit with the idea that justice doesn't always feel good. This is where Freaks becomes moral horror. Not because it shocks you, but because it refuses to tell you how to feel. The film never gives you a speech explaining the ending. There's no moral narrative. There's no reassurance. You're left alone with the outcome. And that's deliberate. Because if the movie explained itself, it would let the audience off the hook. Instead, Freaks ask you to interrogate your own reaction. Do you feel satisfaction? Do you feel discomfort? Do you feel relief? And more importantly, why? That's why this ending has never settled comfortably into horror history. It doesn't offer spectacle. It offers consequence. And consequences don't care whether you feel prepared for them or not. This is the point where the movie quietly turns the mirror. that asks whether your empathy had limits and whether those limits depending on who held power. If the ending feels harsh, that's because exploitation was harsh first, and the film never pretends otherwise. Which brings us to the reason Freaks has never been easy to classify. It's not about horror imagery. It's about moral inevitability. Now, at this point in the movie here as well, you know, Cleopatra had agreed to marry Hans, and there's a scene where Hercules and Cleopatra are sitting next together, and the other side is Hans. And, you know, the rest of the Freaks are at the long table there, and it's basically their marriage, I guess, engagement party or something like that. Cleopatra's getting a little bit deep in her cup. So is Hercules. And, of course, so is Hans. You know, Hans is in love with this woman. She's beautiful. But the rest of the community that Hans belongs to here, the Freaks, they see that Hans is getting married to this woman here, so they agree to accept her into their community. So there's this whole scene where, you know, they pour a bunch of drinks in this huge goblet, and they go around and they share a drink, and we accept you, blah, 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 blah. And then at the end, they move down to Cleopatra, and Cleopatra starts to make fun of them. Cleopatra just starts to make fun of them. You can never accept me. I'll never be a part of you. I'm not one of you. And this whole thing comes out. You know, Hans gets too drunk. He falls. You know, he ends up, I can't remember what happens exactly. He ends up passing out or something. But they carry him to his room. And this is right around the time that, you know, they find out that he's very wealthy too as well. Now, my audience has rejected Freaks, right? The discomfort, hypocrisy, fear of accountability, I guess. So if Freaks is so carefully constructed, if it's thematically consistent, if it knows exactly what it's doing wrong, why did audiences in 1932 reject it so completely? The answer isn't that the movie was too extreme. Hollywood audiences at the time were already watching movies filled with violence, exploitation, and moral collapse. They weren't fragile. They were selective. Freaks didn't offend people by showing something shocking. It offended them by removing their ability to feel superior. And that's important. Audiences weren't used to being implicated. Most movies let you sit at a distance and watch what happened, watch what unfolded. Even when bad things happen, you are positioned safely outside of them, right? Freaks does the opposite. It places you inside the moral space of the story, and then it refuses to give you a clean exit. The outrage wasn't about morality. It was about recognition. People saw behavior that they recognized. Exploitation dressed up as charm. Cruelty masked as humor. Power exercised casually. And the movie didn't let them pretend that it was fiction. That's why the reaction was so intense. The film was banned. Scenes were cut. Entire versions disappeared. And, you know, careers were damaged. You know, the director, what was his name again? Pull this back up here. Todd Browning. I guess I could look at the picture behind me. Todd Browning worked on a few movies after this, but his career was pretty much done after this. You know, and it's not because the movie failed artistically, because it succeeded uncomfortably. This backlash played a real role in the tightening of Hollywood censorship. Movies like Freaks became cautionary tales. Not cautionary in the sense of don't exploit people. Cautionary in the sense of don't make the audience feel responsible. because bad things happen to you. And that distinction matters. Hollywood didn't reject Freaks because it was immoral. They rejected it because it was inconvenient. The film exposed something studios prefer to keep abstract, right? That cruelty doesn't always look monstrous. Sometimes it looks polite. Sometimes it looks charming. Sometimes it looks like that's just how things are. And when a movie disrupts that comfort, the system reacts. And that's why Freaks didn't disappear quietly. It had to be buried. And even after decades, when the film was recovered, it still made people uneasy. Not because times hadn't changed, but because the question the movie asks never stopped being relevant. Who gets protected? And who gets exploited? And who decides what harm counts? Those aren't historical questions. They're ongoing questions. And that's why Freaks keeps resurfacing. Not as a curiosity, but as a challenge. A challenge to audiences. And a challenge to horror itself. Because horror has always circled this idea. That the real monster is often the one society refuses to confront. Now, when it's found out what Cleopatra's doing, I mean, there's these scenes in this movie here where, you know, all the freaks are at different, they're scattered around the circus area underneath the trailers or whatever they're called. I can't remember what they're called. But they're sneaking around and they're watching what's going on. They're hidden, but they're seen. You know what I mean? And it's creepy. It gives you that feeling like, this isn't good. They done fucking cross the line. So it brings to the point here where we come to the final verdict, right? Why Freaks still matters. And that brings us to the final verdict. Why Freaks still matters. And why it's never going to be comfortable. Freaks. So after all of this, after the history, after the backlash, the discomfort, the real question isn't whether Freaks works as a horror movie, because it does. The real question is whether we're actually prepared for what it's asking us to confront. Because Freaks has never been a movie that wants your admiration. It doesn't ask to be praised. It doesn't even ask to be liked. It asks to be taken seriously. And what makes Freaks endure isn't shock value. It's the fact that it refuses to let the audience separate themselves from the moral outcome. This movie doesn't let you hide behind irony. It doesn't just let you laugh it off. And it doesn't let you dismiss it as a product of its time. Because the behavior it exposes didn't disappear. It just learned how to blend in better. And that's why Freaks still feels unsettling. Not because of what it shows, but because of what it reveals. It reveals how easy it is to excuse cruelty when it's polite. And how quickly exploitation gets overlooked when it's profitable. And how uncomfortable people become when power is held accountable instead of protected. This is why Freaks isn't an easy recommendation. Not because it's offensive, but because it's honest. It asks you to sit with consequences, not fantasy consequences, real ones. And it refuses to tell you whether you're allowed to feel satisfied by the outcome. That ambiguity isn't a flaw. It's the point. Horror often gives us monsters that we can safely destroy. Freaks gives us behavior that we recognize. And then it asks what justice looks like when that behavior goes unchecked. That's why this movie still matters. Not as a curiosity, not as controversy, but as a moral stress test. It tests where your empathy ends. It tests who you instinctively defend. And it tests whether discomfort makes you reflective or defensive. And here's the thing. If Freaks still makes people uneasy nearly a century later, that's not a failure of a film. That's evidence that it's still doing its job. Because Freaks doesn't ask who looks like a monster. It asks who acts like one. And it leaves the answer uncomfortably close to home. That's why Freaks isn't just an important horror film. It's an enduring one. Freaks doesn't age. It waits. It waits for audiences to convince themselves that they're more evolved, more compassionate, more enlightened than the people who rejected it in 1932. And then it quietly proves how fragile that confidence really is. This movie doesn't ask for your sympathy or your approval or your comfort. It asks what you do when power stops being protected and starts being answered. If that makes you uneasy, then Freaks is still doing exactly what it was meant to do almost 100 years ago. Now, and then if you've seen this movie, you know what the ending is like. These freaks do to Cleopatra. She becomes a sideshow freak herself. Check it out if you want to see what she looks like after they're done with her. It's kind of fucked up. But justified, right? Well, but that's it. That's all I got for you on this episode of Guess What? You're Wrong. Freaks from 1932? I don't even remember. I'm fucking talking so much. I believe it was. Yeah, Freaks from 1932. Todd Browning, man. Sorry you didn't get to work more because this is a pretty fucking good movie. And the actors in this, the sideshow freaks that they use, the sideshow performers, I guess you should say. Dude, this movie would not have been the same without them. I appreciate this movie. I've watched this movie several times. I watch it. It's for me, it's gone beyond the point of shocking anymore because I've seen it so many times. It's gotten to the point of I start to get that story of what they're trying to tell you, what they're trying to make you see. How do you feel? And should you question the reason why you feel the way that you do? It's important. It's very important. Like I said, that's it. That's all I got for you in this episode of Guess What? You're Wrong. Everybody out there, sweet dreams, love, peace. It's going to rain, baby. That's right. Let it be purple. Now, Guess What? You're Wrong is a part of the Moonshine Militia Podcast Network, where horror isn't about comfort. It's about confrontation. And that's going to do it for the day. Thanks for hanging out with me and letting me bend your ear for a while. Ain't no time for bad shine. And until next time, don't forget. You're wrong.
Later, Tater.
This concludes our broadcast day. Good night and God bless America.